This is Galesburg's Evening News on WGIL. I'm Will Stevenson. Thanks for joining us tonight. A lot has changed in the recent past relating to industrial hemp, especially in Illinois, and there is a summit to that end, a hemp processing summit coming up here in the area that farmers might want to know about. So we'll talk about that with Phil Alberti. He is a commercial ag educator with the University of Illinois Extension, which is hosting the summit, and he's on the line right now. Phil, thanks so much for your time.
Hey, thanks for having me.
Was I correct in my understanding there in the beginning that, if I remember right, things have changed, especially in terms of state law regarding industrial hemp in the not-so-recent past. Is that right?
Well, the rules for industrial hemp in the state of Illinois are going to, in most ways, follow what they felt they followed for 2019.
Okay.
What's going to change, though, is the new federal rules and regulations that came out and are now in place. And so there's some subtle distinctions between what the federal rules are and what the state of Illinois is going to be, and definitely some confusion there. And so regarding the THC concentration and how state law is going to be handling the testing of those, it gets kind of complicated. We really want to make sure people understand those differences, but it's something that we'll certainly address here at the summit as well.
And not to probably get too deep in the weeds, if you will, regarding this, but are these changes from a federal standpoint, are they good things, bad things, or inconvenient? How do you see them?
I see it being just a lot that we have to adjust for and learn. I think from a legislative standpoint, they are doing their best to try to figure this out, but it's uncharted territory for this country to really handle the cultivation and distribution of industrial hemp in that way. And so I sympathize with them with trying to figure this out and figure out production on the fly. So, I can't really say if it's good or bad, but they're just they're out there trying to make this work. And if there are any concerns regarding how these rules and regulations are being handled, we definitely encourage those complaints to be reached out to the federal government, USDA. Let them know, what your thoughts are. And so the comment period is actually still open till the end of this month.
Mm-hmm.
And so if there are any issues over those rules, we definitely encourage folks to reach out and make your voice heard.
So they are rules in relation to the harvesting and processing and for lack of a better term, getting the hemp to market?
Absolutely, yes. That's really where the distinction between the federal rules and the state rules kind of come in, and making sure that you understand the differences if it comes down to interstate commerce and going over state lines. In short, I can say this, without getting too far into it, that the state rules for Illinois have been very generous with the growers with regards to restrictions compared to the federal rules as we're figuring things out. And I think producers have been very happy with the response from the Department of Ag in the state of Illinois. So just keeping in mind that, in short, it's going to be much easier to import hemp products into the state of Illinois instead of exporting them out of the state of Illinois based on those federal rules versus state rules. So making sure folks understand that.
In a broad sense, Phil, what kind of a business has the manufacturer, the growing of hemp been for Illinois? How big of a deal has it been?
I think bigger than we expected.
Yeah.
The numbers up there have been inflated, I believe, just, that's the nature of introducing a new crop. We had over 20,000 acres being registered for production of hemp this year, but given the rough growing season we had, just lack of understanding the difficulties with how labor-intensive this crop is, and then just the challenging conditions, rules, and regulations, I think we're going to see a significant number of those acres not ultimately be planted and harvested. So we'll find out what those true numbers are, come February. But it's just been a lot of interest, not only in the CBD market, growing hemp for CBD, which is where most of the conversations are being had, but regarding our row crop producers' interest in the grain and fiber markets.
Yeah.
With that being said, there is no market in the state of Illinois or regionally, not much of a market for grain or fiber in the country, as a matter of fact. However, that there is interest in that changing in the future, and so we definitely have some optimism, but we're a long way from that, and we have a lot of work to do. But Yeah, just a tremendous amount of interest for both growing and processing in the state of Illinois.
In terms of the growing of hemp, it sounds like you're telling me that we talked a lot about the problems that corn and soybean farmers had this past year with the wet conditions, both at the planting stage and at the harvest stage. It sounds like that farmers who grow hemp have been doing have had the same problems.
Absolutely. The benefit with a lot of the industrial hemp plant or the cannabis plant, actually, as a matter of fact, is that it's photoperiod dependent, like our soybeans are.
Mm-hmm.
So it was able to get planted a little bit later and avoid some of those adverse conditions. We had folks planting high CBD hemp in fields into, you know, late June, early July, and still getting a viable crop just because of how that photoperiod and flowering gets initiated. But certainly late season issues as well with the hemp crop. It mm-hmm. coincided, you know, roughly around the time of corn soybean harvest. But also it was just very, very wet, and getting into the field to get it out was a challenge. So absolutely, just kind of the timelines of these crops do intersect, being cautious of that as well.
Is it as, for folks who may not know, is it as resilient of a crop as sometimes we think of soybeans being resilient?
I think it depends on the stage of growth and the growing season.
Okay.
You know, we saw that early on, if for some reason, you know, we got a heavy rainfall, maybe those soils crusted over or ponded, the hemp crop didn't handle that very well.
Mm.
But we were surprised with its ability once it was well established and those root systems were developed to handle those drought-like conditions we had in some parts of the state in July, right around the time of corn silking and pollinating. So we saw kind of a little bit of both. You know, it's hard to make statements on, you know, how much rainfall it likes, how much irrigation does it need. We saw very anecdotally that once it was established, it was a hardy crop, but we have a lot of work to do figuring that out.
So it also sounds then like at least farmers around here suggested when it was time to harvest corn and beans that things weren't as bad as maybe they thought it would be. It sounds like that's the same thing with hemp?
I guess it kind of depends on, you know, this is right around flowering when you're going to be harvesting this. This is going to be... it's essentially, you know, the female flowers of the plant that are extremely valuable, and these plants get very, very big. So late in the season, with a lot of that rainfall, we saw, you know, some of these plants kind of tipping over,
yeah,
or, you know, laying down. And again, because these are the flowering structures that are so valuable, the last thing you want is for them to be getting splashed up with the water or the dirt, because that opens them up for pathogens later on in the season, like white mold and gray mold, which we saw quite a bit of this growing season later on, right around harvest time.
Are there misunderstandings that you come across or misconceptions about the growing of hemp, things that maybe the public thinks is the case but really aren't?
Yeah, I mean, I think a lot of it has to come down ultimately to how expensive it is to get started with this from a seed perspective. Your seed costs are going to be astronomical compared to a typical row crop operation where, you know, we'll see how the market shakes out, but ultimately this year growers were paying $1 to $2 per seed in a field or an acre where you're having between 1,000 and 2,000 established plants per acre.
Mm.
So that's significant seeding costs. And that's, you know, we're not even talking about failure for germination or low seedling vigor, things of that nature. So seeding costs were tremendous this year, and I think that was one thing that really caught people off guard. And then ultimately, where do you go? How do you dry this stuff down? Where do you go with the processors and the extractors? It wasn't like our typical row crops where we can take it to an elevator, cut a check, and call it a day. You know, there's a lot of other things that we're working on here, and we're trying to figure out with how the market's going to develop with sending it off to an extractor, and then do you have a secondary market lined up? Are you going to be doing direct sales yourself?
Mm-hmm.
In a lot of cases, you know, these processors don't want to take the product off your hands completely. They'd like to give you an extracted crude oil product back at a fee, and then you can do some secondary marketing from there. So I think it's big things that, you know, going into this industry, we just weren't used to. Maybe.
Yeah.
And we're figuring that out as we go.
Are those cost things that'll change over time, do you think?
I think I think ultimately, as we get more processors up and running, whether they're doing small batches or larger batches, you know, as some of these bigger corporations get involved, perhaps with the some of these ethanol production facilities getting involved, I think we're going to see a little bit more of a swing towards, you know, favorable pricing. But right now, what we have is very limited processing and a large amount of biomass needed to be processed. And so right now, it's kind of it's a bottleneck. And so, you know, hopefully as we get more visibility on who the processors are, where they are, and what their capacities are, we can get a little bit more clarity on what those prices are going to be.
Okay. I'm short on time, but I know that's, I think I might have asked you anything that a lot of folks could have asked at this summit coming up. Tell me about the when and the where and what folks interested in attending should be thinking about.
So, yeah, the event is going to be held on Monday, January 27th from 9 a.m. until 3 p.m. at the Roseville Community Center.
Okay.
It's going to include a baked potato bar lunch, and we're only cost $10 for the entire program. We are not in this to make a buck off of this, which is what we've seen a lot in this industry. We just want people to get good information, and they're going to get a good meal, and the extra couple bucks goes towards the education. But we're going to talk about things like financing and crop insurance. We're going to focus a little bit more on the second half of the cultivation of hemp, being the harvest, storage, extraction, and then maybe direct sales marketing. Things like that are kind of going to be the focus, which is different than a lot of the production meetings we've had this year, which have been all focused on how do you grow this crop. We're going to talk a little bit about that back end of production and maybe some of the pitfalls that people experienced this growing season. And you can go online, you can call our extension office, but you can go online and register at go.illinois.edu/hempsummit.
All right, and that's 2 weeks from today at the Roseville Community Center. Phil Alberti, thanks so much for your time. You're a commercial ag educator for the University of Illinois Extension, and you'll be leading the summit here in a couple of weeks. Thanks for the great information, and hopefully I didn't completely blow your presentation out of the water here with all my questions.
No, that's great. These are the things we want people thinking about. We encourage discussion and collaboration, and we want everybody to benefit from this. You know, the rising tide raises all boats, and we want people to get this information, and we're really looking forward to the event.
Phil, thank you again, and we will have a link for registration when we post this interview momentarily on the on-air conversation section, that is, of WGIL.com. Stay tuned. We'll come back with sports and business news next on Galesburg's Evening News.